Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Donald Trump is promising to unite a divided country after winning the White House last night.
I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans, and this is so important to me.
Overnight, global markets plunged on the news, but stabilized this morning. And this morning, Hillary Clinton spoke about that glass ceiling that she failed to shatter.
I know we have still not shattered that highest and hardest glass ceiling, but someday someone will, and hopefully sooner than we might think right now.
And joining us from Washington is Mara Liasson, NPR's national political correspondent. And Mara, we've had a few hours to digest what, is being called a thunderclap, a lightning bolt, a lot of things being thrown at it, but a shocking to many win given the polls and the predictions. So what are you hearing there? What are you hearing from lawmakers? What are you hearing on the ground in Washington?
Well, Democrats are in a state of shock. They certainly didn't expect this. No one expected this. Donald Trump didn't expect this. Nobody's polls showed this happening. There were a few that showed it very close, but nobody thought that he would win. It was basically a failure of imagination, not unlike what happened during the Republican primaries when the Republican Party thought he couldn't possibly end up being the nominee. I think that in Hillary Clinton's remarks, at one point she said, a peaceful transfer of power is something that we cherish in our democracy. We also cherish the rule of law and the value that we're all equal, and freedom of expression and freedom of worship, and we must defend these values. It seemed like she was making a kind of subtle challenge to Donald Trump, saying if you try to diminish these values, there will be resistance to that. So Democrats have to figure out how they're going to resist Donald Trump. Yeah. They'll do it in the Congress. They're a minority in both houses now. New leaders will emerge in the Democratic Party. I think it's fair to say the Clinton era is over, but there will be new leaders emerging eventually. The question now is, what does Barack Obama do? He was going to stay in Washington until his younger daughter finished high school. Does he become the kind of center of the Democrats' government in exile? It's not going to be Clinton, no. I think. I think when the Democrats do their postmortems, they're going to get in a circular firing squad, as losing parties tend to do, and they're going to point at James Comey, and they might point at WikiLeaks, but they're also going to point at Hillary Clinton, who was a weak candidate and was a status quo candidate in a change election.
Yeah. Mara, what about the change that Trump has been talking about? What about the expectations for what he is going to do when he takes office? We've heard about building a wall, repealing Obamacare, banning Muslims from entering the country, ripping up trade deals.
Well, some of them are easier to do.
Is your expectation that he's going to do all those things?
Well, no. I mean, some of them are easier said than done, and some of them are easier to get done. Repealing Obamacare, I think, would be relatively easy. The Congress has already passed it something like 60 times. Even most of those votes were symbolic. Now they have to come up with something to put in its place. I think building a wall might not happen. A lot of Trump supporters even said that they thought that was kind of a symbolic proposal. He certainly won't go forward with TPP, but then Hillary Clinton, if she had won, wouldn't either. But in terms of deporting illegal aliens, you heard on your air not long ago Roger Wicker saying, oh, well, Obama deports them too, as if it was just the same thing. The ban on Muslims, that's morphed into a couple different forms since he first announced it. He's also said he's going to appoint a special prosecutor and wants to put Hillary Clinton in jail. Is he going to continue on that?
Well, speaking of that,
there are a lot of things that he will sign that the Republican Congress sends him. The question is, what are things that he wants to do that the Republican Congress will not want to
do?
Well,
before we let you go, just speaking of that, will we see Rudy Giuliani as an attorney general? Will we see Chris Christie in the cabinet? Will we see the Republicans? And what happens to the Republicans who thought Trump was going to lose and dissed him, and now are
well, they're not going to have jobs in the cabinet. although people, it's human nature to accommodate to power. And I think there will be a lot of people, just like you saw during the campaign, when they first unendorsed him, then they re-endorsed him. There'll be people who are coming, to say, gee, I'm sorry, now I'm on board with you. But Chris Christie, Rudy Giuliani, I don't see why they wouldn't be in a cabinet. He doesn't have a very big circle of advisors. He doesn't have the kind of bench of government in waiting that Hillary Clinton did. So I expect that that Rudy Giuliani and Chris Christie will have prominent roles. So will Newt Gingrich. Maybe Bob Corker.
Okay.
That's NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson joining us from Washington. Thanks, Mara.
Thank you.
And let's bring in Carrie Haney now, who's an associate professor of political science and co-director of Duke University's Center of the Study of Race, Ethnicity, and Gender in the Social Sciences. He's in Durham. Carrie Haney, how much do you think race played into this election?
You know, I think it's an interesting question, and I think it played a significant part of the election. You know, we almost saw a new Southern strategy in the Trump campaign. And by that I mean Trump ran a campaign that played on or exploited racial fears, racial resentments. And we saw in this campaign not only dog whistle politics, but bullhorn politics, where he shouted some of these things. And that's a break from the past when we would see these things in sort of subtle campaign.
Well, Carrie, give examples, because I can hear Trump supporters, and you know we'll see it on our social media, saying that's not true. That's not why. So give some examples.
Well, the obvious ones are the references to Mexican immigrants as rapists, Muslims, going to ban all Muslims. That type of politics where you are playing on racial anxieties and some real anxieties to use ethnic groups as scapegoats. I think it's unfortunate.
Talking about that there might be problems at the polls, and you know what I'm talking about, that kind of, you know, signaling that it might be an inner city and therefore, you know, equals a race issue.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, so what happens now? I mean, how do we go forward? We have already seen, we saw some upset in Oakland, California last night, a car set on fire. We saw protests in other parts of California. I think it was Los Angeles, 500 people chanting, "Not my president." In Oregon, anti-Trump demonstrators blocked traffic, rail lines. What happens now?
Yeah, and I think we'll see more of that, unfortunately, in the coming days. You know, the statement that Secretary Clinton gave earlier this morning was a gracious and what I think is a responsible statement in the sense that she began the type of healing that needs to happen. And I don't think Mr. Trump is yet able to do that. So her statement was very important. It was very gracious and responsible and called on her supporters to accept the outcome of the election and to get behind President-elect Trump. President Obama was very gracious and eloquent in his statement, also doing some of that same work, trying to pull the country together. And I think Donald Trump is not yet able to fill that role.